You're listening to the Learnings and Missteps podcast, where we intend to change the image of careers in the trades. We celebrate the real men and women who have built careers in the construction industry by bringing their personal stories straight to you. I began my career as a plumber's apprentice in the late 1900s. Over the last 26 years, I've had the fortune of meeting some of the most resilient, intelligent, and inspiring people who happen to be construction workers. My career path as a plumber has provided me with experiences and opportunities I thought were inaccessible. And I want you to know that the trades are a place where dreams can come true. These stories are brought to you by three brothers who share a mother. I am Jesse, your host. Our in-house writer is Ernest, aka La Voz.
Hello.
And our co-host, Renee.
What's up?
Y'all ready?
Yes, sir.
Dale.
Hey, Jesse, what kind of frame of mind does this episode lead me into?
Well, have you ever wondered why your instructions aren't being followed? So if you've been in that situation, we got something for you. Some other cool stuff we're going to be able to get from here. Some really simple, deceivingly simple principles for success. And you also get to hear a couple of guys whine about knowledge work and why it's tiring. Like they don't work with their hands anymore, and they try real hard to prove why they're tired after not really putting their hands on anything. In all of that, we uncover a remedy for email and text drama. So, you ready to hear it?
Let's do it.
If you're president for a day, what would one policy or procedure you would change?
I would put in place one specific recipe for all tortillas to be made in the country.
I would.
All tortillas with flour or corn?
All flour tortillas would have to be made using the same recipe because there's some shitty tortillas out there, man. What do you think about that one?
Jesse, yep. For president.
Oh, we're in trouble, baby.
If I was president, my executive order would be to like have to add in your public school curriculum some kind of leadership training.
Ooh, go with yours though, Renee. I want to hear yours.
So I just started reading The Dichotomy of Leadership. Have you read it?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I just finished Extreme Ownership. After reading Extreme Ownership, you know, I was like, yeah, like, I'm going to own everything. I was like going super hard about it. I noticed like I started to rub people the wrong way a little bit. I feel like I went overboard. And that's where the dichotomy comes in. Like, yeah, it's cool to be a hard charger, but there's a balance. So yes. What do you think about that?
It's a true pendulum theory. So if you're going too far to the right, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, man, I'm too hard. And then you go all the way back to the left, and then you're too soft. And I mean that by you don't care as much, you're letting things go. You got to find that middle balance. And that's the hardest thing. That's the dichotomy of leadership. Man, I'm guilty of it too. I'll get into a meeting and I'm hard charged. And then all of a sudden you can feel your blood pressure going because you know it. And you're like, I got to step off. Take that step back. That's how I feel about it.
How did you learn about this? Like, when did you decide to start, like, learning about this stuff?
Back in my history of just me being me, I was young, dumb. I would chase the dollar. I would just try to find what was right because I didn't know what I wanted to do. Okay, I've got a degree as a civil engineer. I was in the military. I was driving back and forth from Austin to San Antonio. And a buddy of mine, my neighbor, and he said, hey, man, you got to check out this podcast. I've never listened to a podcast. It was Mike Ritland's podcast. I started listening to it, and I'm like, man, these news things are better than listening to the radio music. And he actually had Jocko on there, and I listened to Jocko, and I'm like, this dude's inspirational. And I listened to his book, and from that moment on, it changed my life on my perspective on work. Mm. You know, am I the 4:30 in the morning guy? Yes, I am. Getting ready for this podcast. I'm on my computer 5 o'clock this morning, sending out emails, trying to make people mad in hell. Yeah. But you got to find what's inspirational to you. Simple, but not easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simple. You just go do it, but it's not easy to do.
Deceivingly simple. But yep. Damn it. I got to get out of bed. damn it, I got to put my running shoes on. Damn. Yep. I'm just going to send one email. And then 2 hours later.
Man, where'd these 2 hours go?
That laptop is like a black hole sometimes. Right? You open it up and then it just sucks all the time and energy out of your day straight into your Outlook.
Come home at night after work and I'll sit on the couch and I'm like, I know I could go spend 30, 45 minutes to go work out, go do something. Mm-hmm. But I'm just so mentally exhausted from work. I don't physically do the work anymore. Mine's all in my head. It's all teaching, guys. It's all filling out change orders, reports, walking decks.
I got a question about that. So you're saying you don't do the physical work anymore. Like, can you flesh out for me, like, because there's like this common misconception that as you progress in your career, the work gets easier, right? Like, as a laborer, you're looking up at your superintendent like, yeah, of course you're not tired, or of course you're telling me to go faster because you don't work, you know? So what do you think about that?
So that's a great topic. I don't know if Jesse told you or not, but I used to work with Turn. I was training a superintendent at that time. He was a place and finish guy, carpenter foreman, lead man, and now all of a sudden he's a superintendent. He says, man, I thought your guys' job was so easy. He's like, how do you get all this stuff done? I said, it's time management. You got to find the time. You got to be the first one here and the last one to leave. You have to put in that time because these guys rely on you. In return, you have to rely on your men, your leaders, your foremen. You have to give them responsibility. Don't hold it all in your head.
I would say what taxes your mental energy, right, from you transition from working out in the trenches, putting your hands on the work, to now planning, managing, and tracking execution of the work, the drain really comes from two parts. One is you have a high level idea of what the outcome, the overall outcome is, but you've got to be able to translate that in the simplest terms so that everybody in the organization understands what their role is and what good looks like. That's not easy.
You guys just exampled this morning. It seems so simple.
I told Renee, hey, follow me and I'll walk you through it. In my brain, what I meant is come over here. I'll give you the little adapter for your headset for your phone while your laptop is shutting down because we're having laptop issues. And once we make that exchange, then go back to the other room so we don't have an echo. What he understood was totally different. Like, because all I said was come follow me. I'll walk you through it.
I understood come over here. I'll walk you through it as you log on to the phone. And then while you're on the phone, I'll walk you through your laptop.
Total disconnect. Yeah. And so it was easy for me to say, I'll walk you through it and know what I meant. It would have taken more time and energy to break that up so that we both had a clear understanding of what we were about to do. So that's not easy.
Because it's all in your mind. But if that lowest person in that job site does not understand what the job is, the task is at hand, you're never going to get it accomplished correctly on time. You have to break it down. You have to explain that to everybody.
And then when you fail to break it up in clear chunks for everybody, the next phase of the kick in the mouth is now you got to spend time explaining what you really meant. And it's like, oh, shit, no, what'd you do? That's not what we're... Oh, let me, and we lived it out, right?
Then you get mad at them, and you,
yes,
because you're like, well, you told me to do this, and you're like, I just want to choke you, but it's like, oh, wait, that was 100% on me because I didn't give you clear, concise directive.
So that is taxing, right? Because yes, I want to choke them, but I can't choke them, and then I get mad, right? And I let people know, like, physically, even though I may not say what I'm thinking, physically, they know I'm irritated. And so there's some damage that erodes the relationship that's a valuable relationship. So now I got to go repair that. Yep. Right. And I do that a million times a day. And we do that like over and over throughout the day. And brother, it's tiring. It takes energy. Very different muscles, but they're still tiring. It looks easy because we don't have our hands on the tools. Renee, to what you're recognizing is with every level of work, there is complexity and difficulty in all of those levels, but it just looks different. And if you haven't experienced it, you can't appreciate it. And that's okay. You know, on the downside, there are some leaders, Jim, that we've worked with in our careers that really don't do a damn thing.
It's true.
So, Jim, what do you want our audience to know about you?
I'm a simple person. Mm. My goal in life is I want to please everybody. Yeah. I want everybody to be happy with me. I am my own worst critic. I want to make people happy. I don't like people being mad at me or disappointed in me.
That's really important to you, that you don't want to disappoint people.
Correct. Every single day I'm failing at something. Mm-hmm. So how do you get better at it? I try and I try and I try.
What would you want your entry-level employees to know about you?
Entry-level, I will give you the shirt off my back. If you ask me for help, I will help you. Biggest thing for me, if anybody wanted to know and you were to come work with me, not for me, there's only a couple rules. Show up on time, be respectful, and don't be late.
Yes. Yes. I like that. Come on time. Be respectful and don't be late. Well, you know,
don't be late.
You know, show up on time. Very valuable thing, right? We touched on it, right? Renee and I were late. Jim was on the call probably 20 minutes before the call was scheduled to start and then sent us a reminder text to say, hey, if you ain't 15 minutes early, you're late. And so being on time. I when I was out in the field, there was a period of time very early in my career where the job had to be at the job site at 7 o'clock. And so because I was in the parking lot at 7, I considered that to be on time. What do you think about that, Jim?
Oh, no. All right. No, so, hey, Jesse, come here. Let's go have a conversation.
Yes.
Hey, what time does the job site start? What time are you supposed to be on site? 7 o'clock.
Seven.
Okay. What's your job title, Jesse?
Plumber's helper. It's my first year, man.
Plumber helper. Okay.
Yep.
Where are all your tools at, Jesse?
They're in the back of the truck. They're in my toolbox.
Are you ready to work at 7 o'clock?
Well, no, but I'm here.
Okay. That's good. But how about that? How about Renee over here? Renee's waiting on you. Mm. It's now 7:03. Time is money, right? Yep. 7 o'clock means 7 o'clock. But you're trying to teach it. Let's just you're in your fourth year. Renee's in his first year. And you're now his mentor.
Mm.
How does that look? Jesse's showing up at 7 o'clock, but Renee's there at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, Renee knows I need to sign all this paperwork. I got pre-test plans to sign. I got to go through a safety walk for something. I got to go inspect all these scissor lifts that I'm working on. Oh, wait, I'm going to be on the forklift today. I got to check that out. It's 7 o'clock. So by the time you get started, it's now 7:45. We know how plumbers work.
They're 7 to 30.
I had to throw that jab in, sorry. Being on time is the most important part of your day. Because if you can't be on time, you have failed. The very first thing in the day, the very first thing that really impacts your life is being on time.
Yep.
When you're not on time, that little bit of trust goes away.
Ah, that is a fantastic point.
My dad made bread his entire life.
Bread?
Yeah. Yeah. My dad was a baker. That man would be there an hour before his shift. He worked an hour away from home. So I learned a lot of that from him that has never left my body. It has never left my mind. It drives me nuts. I love my wife with all my heart. I hate being late. When I'm in a rush, I get anxiety. When I know we're playing a softball game at 6:30 and it's getting close to 6 o'clock, I get nervous and I'm stuck in traffic. It drives me. I have to be early. Go ahead, Renee. You're going to ask me a question.
Yeah. In my experience working in the field, you know, I've been under some disgruntled forepersons before. They might have felt jaded because, you know, they applied to be superintendent or something and they didn't get it. Right. So now they're kind of starting to show up late or show up in the parking lot at 7, but they were supposed to clock in at 7. Right. And then just mm-hmm. like you said, now they're getting tools ready and have to do all the safety, all that stuff. But they're the foreperson and they have people under them. Right. And we kind of touched a little bit earlier on. You were talking about decentralized command, how you got to explain to you the people that are working with you in the more entry levels, right? So that they could teach the junior But how do you how do you do that? Like, you know, how do you, because you can't talk to everybody, you know, you can't talk to, if you were to talk to every single person that was late every day, what, how could you function, you know?
You have to build a trust.
How?
How do you build trust? By having a conversation with them. You have to explain why it's important. Now, if it's a habitual person that's continuous being late, then you got to pull that guy off to the side. Never belittle anybody in front of a team. Be respectful. Respect for people, man. It goes a long way. And if you are the apprentice and your boss is late all the time, talk to him about it. Hey, Jesse, I'm relying on you to be here on time because I'm learning from you. If you continuously be late, what am I really learning?
Well, another thing that Jim touched on was, you know, you got to trust and you got to give responsibility. Share the responsibility. When you give somebody responsibility, you also have to give them authority. This is your scope. This is the thing that I need you to own and make it happen. These are the expectations. This is the timeline, right? This is when we need it done. They're probably going to mess something up, and that's okay, because that's your job as a leader. Help identify the weak point and coach them on that weak point. Thinking that your plan is going to be executed to perfection early in your career, it's a falsity, right? You got to practice and figure it out. You also have to start building your skills as a leader. Leading is really about developing people. And correct. And when you give people responsibility and authority and give them the space to make their own decisions and make some mistakes, that provides the venue for you to help develop them. But you got to create that space. You got to let them go. You got to let them mess up. Keep them in the boundaries. Because you're a supervisor, you got to go make sure, you know, safety without a question, there's no deviation. You make sure everybody's going to go home better than they showed up. Nobody's going to get hurt. But some of the decision making on how they're going to do it, leave that to them, right? Let them fail. I don't know about you, Jim, but me, pain and failure have been my best teachers my entire life. I had to have some of the same failures over and over again.
Every single day I fail. You got to be humble enough to understand it.
To learn from it, right? Because it can be a failure, and it can be, there's benefit in that. If you're humble enough to examine, reflect, and learn from that decision you made and adjust going forward. So, Jim, you mentioned softball. How'd you get into softball? I had the privilege of playing it in a tournament, mostly watching because, you know, I was a spectator. In the dugout, I had special access, I guess. You're a pretty darn good ball player, man. How'd you get into playing softball?
I played ball my entire life. Growing up, I played baseball. High school, played baseball. I played on the all-army softball team out in Europe where I was stationed.
Did you have any baseball cards made of you?
No, not at all.
No.
No baseball card. I'm not that good. We play Fridays, Sundays, and Tuesdays right now.
Still playing right now.
Yeah, I still play ball. You have to. You have to find time for yourself.
I struggle with that big time. For example, I was getting into boxing, but like I feel like I failed to properly manage my time because I was going to boxing Monday through Friday when the gym was open, right after work. And then from 6 to 8, I was boxing, and then it was like a 20-minute drive home. So I don't get home till 8:20. I eat, and then, you know, maybe I'm awake for like 30 more minutes, and then I slept. So I have a wife and two kids, and I felt like because of my consistent time to, I guess, put my family first, like I felt like I was having a lot of marriage problems at the time. You know, my daughter was born and like she started to grow like distant from me. She wouldn't want me to carry her and stuff. And like, you know, cause like I was a stranger or something, cause I was never home. I was always at the gym and then work. So, you know, I didn't know how to properly manage that time. So I ended up just quitting because, you know.
Were you showering? Did you take like showers? Maybe that's why she didn't carry her.
So Renee, what's important to you? What is the important aspect of your day? Is it your wife, your kids, work? Is it boxing? You got to set your priorities. If boxing is still important to you, you have to explain to her why it's important to you. If your wife wanted you to be home, you got to be home because that's what's important.
So, Jim, what were your earliest career aspirations?
I really didn't have any. I always want to do better. Do I want to be a CEO of a big time company? No. I want to teach people.
And so what was it that lit that fire? Because you say you didn't have career aspirations, but man, every time I'm around you, there's a fire going on there. where did that come from?
Some people think that I'm kind of standoffish. I'm okay. Too hard charging because I am a hard charging guy.
So Jesse was telling me that you started off doing concrete.
Yeah, I am a structural concrete project manager, superintendent. So I build high-rise buildings.
What was your first job ever?
McDonald's.
McDonald's. How did you go from McDonald's to project manager?
Then it was Piggly Wiggly. You guys know what Piggly Wiggly is?
Oh, I know what Piggly Wiggly is.
My daughter's nickname is Piggly Wiggly.
I was a beggar. I've had so many different jobs. I worked at a car dealership where I detailed cars, joined the military, worked while I was in college. And that's really what got me into construction was I've always been a builder. During my high school in the summer, as I'd go work on re-roofing a house, re-siding a house, putting in windows. Went through college and got a job as designing houses. But then I transitioned into a concrete company up in Wisconsin and really just loved concrete. There's so many different aspects in concrete. It's amazing. And the economy kind of went down in 2006, 2007. Up there in Wisconsin before it really hit down here in Texas, and I moved down to Austin. Been working in the concrete industry ever since.
How would you entice a young lady or young man looking to make a career? How would you sell the concrete industry to them? What would you tell them about it?
You're going to work a lot of hours.
Plenty of overtime.
Plenty of overtime. When you're getting into like the structural concrete sides of it, we are the... I hate to say the roughnecks of everybody, right? In the oil field. We are the rough concrete. We drive the job. The other trades cannot do anything without the concrete guys. So we run the schedules. We coordinate a lot of the MEP sleeve trades, the reinforcing guys. So it's not an easy job to do, and it's hard to promote that. So here's where my difficulty comes into play. I don't speak Spanish. Very, very, very limited Spanish. 95% of my staff speak Spanish and don't speak English. So that's a hard thing to do. I like to motivate people. I love to get in the morning, be an inspirational speech. You know, you go over there and you talk to the guy, hey, can you translate that for me? And then you get responses back. You might pick up on a word or two. How do you translate your message, your inspiration, to want to get somebody in there? So I've tried to learn Spanish. It's hard. I don't know where to stop.
Duolingo. There's an app. It's called Duo, Duolingo.
I'll check it out. I just put it on my notes.
Awesome. I have that app too. It's really good because it starts you off by teaching you like everyday conversational things. So it's not like you're learning some random ass stuff like you're never going to say. It's like, you know, hands-on, like you can use this like tomorrow and talk to somebody.
But you asked, Jesse, how do you get the people into the concrete trade? That's a hard thing to do. In the Texas area, it's a very hard thing to do, especially if you're a white guy. It is extremely hard because it's all about, well, my brother's looking for a job. Can he come aboard?
Mm-hmm.
Senior superintendent and I were just speaking about this yesterday. It's very hard to find people like ourselves to come in and build and do what we do. You might have your management staff, but the actual physical job itself is the hardest part. Trying to find the people for it. And I mean, that's in every industry right now. Trying to find people.
How did you find the people you have now?
Word of mouth. You hire a superintendent. The superintendent then hires a foreman. A foreman now has six people that he's always dealt with before. They jump ship all day long. There's no loyalty anymore. But there's a reason why people jump ship.
Mm.
I'd like to sit down. If I were to go back to my former self and ask, why did you leave? You know, I still don't have that answer to this day. I know I was chasing the money, but why did I really leave?
Well, you bring up an important point, right? Like, Well, there's a few, because it's not easy. That work is not easy work. You think of the concrete guys out there, the men and women that are doing that work. They rarely are working under shade, right? Like plumbers, you know, us plumbers, we get to work in the shade. We get to work in the AC sometimes, right? A lot of times we're out there under the sun. But concrete people, they're always in the sun. They're all like it's just being the exposure to the elements is almost 100% of the time. So the work is not easy. The other part, Jim, that you touched on is, and I wish more managers and leaders would take ownership of their portion of this. We get, it's easy to say that there is no loyalty, but think about who I want to think about who I'm loyal to.
Yep.
Right. I'm loyal to the people that listen to me, that make me feel valued because they're giving me the time to hear my stuff, my pain. I'm loyal to the people that invest in me, that contribute to my learning and my growth. I'm loyal to the people that support me when I am having trouble and I need some help. And I know, man, I've worked with in any trade, not just concrete, but in any trade, I've worked with people that were like, oh, you need Friday off? Just go ahead and just tear your ass, kick rocks. We don't need you back.
Mm-hmm.
Or hey man, you know, this tool that I have, it's worn down and it's causing me to do a lot of extra stuff that's not necessary. And the response is, man, stop whining, stop being a prima donna, just go out there and make it happen. And so the leaders create this environment where as a worker, I don't feel appreciated. So you know what, if they're going to pay me a dollar more and treat me like crap, hey, at least I'm getting a dollar more or a quarter more, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather work somewhere that, you know, if I'm going to be treated like turd, shit, pay me more, you know?
Yeah.
And then on the other side of it is, what's the development plan? You know, I've been fortunate to work with, I worked for TD Industries for a little bit, and it was clear that there was a pathway, if I chose, that there was a pathway to go from apprentice to whatever level in the organization I wanted to go to,
mm-hmm.
right? Naturally, I'd have to commit myself. I'd have to sacrifice and I had to learn some stuff, but there was a pathway. And now the vast majority of specialty contractors out there do not have a pathway.
No.
That concrete finisher out there, that form builder out there, the only thing that they can see and really the only thing that company is presenting to them is the opportunity to keep doing the same damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's the case, why would I stay?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not saying that poor concrete guys, right? I'm saying that there's both parties have an onus, the yes. worker and the leaders within the organization. And because the leaders are leaders, they have a greater responsibility to put something in place that creates an environment that people don't want to leave.
But here's the difference. You brought up a good point. There's a difference between leaders and managers.
Oh, tell me about that. I like that.
Some people just manage. They don't lead. You got to lead by example. That's right. Number one. If you're the superintendent or if you're the foreman or you're the project manager, grab a broom. Your lowest laborer out there, if he's seeing that superintendent's pushing a broom, I've had it happen to me. Well, hey, Jim, let me go take that from you. No, you have something else to do. I'm good right now. Let me push this broom. It shows respect. But right. Leadership is what you've seen before in the past. You've dealt with superintendents on job sites. You're like, I don't want to be anything like that.
Yeah, man. Good.
So whatever that guy doing right there, I want nothing to do with him. I'll never follow that man into battle. Never. Because he just sits on top of the hill and he just gets on his phone, starts barking orders. People that just manage, they just go through their day-to-day operations. They don't care about what else is going on. There's a difference. There's a huge difference between managing and leading people. You have to lead by example.
Yeah, it's easy to manage to a schedule. It's easy to manage to an outcome, point the finger and say, you're not making it. But showing them how and supporting them to get there is leading.
Right. Like you just said it. Well, hey, you guys aren't making schedule. You're supposed to be done with this activity today by noon. Why aren't you done? You're not going down to the root cause of what's really happening.
I love it.
I love root cause analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I love the military AARs.
Mm-hmm.
So, Renee, after action reviews. Every time that you complete a task, immediately after that task is complete, sit down with your group, do an AAR. What was good about this mission? What was bad about this mission? What happened with the concrete? Why was the concrete delayed? Did the batch plant come down? Did they not have enough trucks? Did you not ask the question, what else are you pouring today?
Mm.
You have to ask these questions, but that comes with the experience. But if somebody's not leading you and teaching you those questions to ask, you are failing that person that's next in line for you. Your replacement that you're supposed to be training.
Referring to a conversation that we were having, he's trying to connect with somebody. And it's been difficult, right? Because the person travels in and travels out and travels in. And, you know, they've got a bunch of meetings and they're busy, right? Everybody's busy. And it, my thought, like, I get that, right? And so I shared an example of a situation that I was in. I was trying to get some specific information from an individual. And, man, we kept emailing back and forth. It was a large file. It was just like I wasn't getting what I wanted. And weeks went by. I'm like, dude, I need that information. We were going to be in Omaha. Actually, we were in Omaha together for a couple of days. I'm like, okay, number one thing before you leave is I need that information from you, right? I'll take my jump drive and just download it on mine and we'll go from there. And then it's time to leave, right? I got to go. I got to catch a plane. And I said, okay, but I still need that information from you. Okay, well, next time I said, nope, I'm going with you to the airport. And on our way to the airport, I'm getting that information from you. He's like, man, you're serious. I was like, you're damn right I'm serious. I need it. So as he drove, gave me his laptop. I slid that file over, put it on my jump drive. I got the information I needed. But I was at a block, right? Like I tried being polite, like a text and a reminder email and a calendar invite and like all of these things, and they weren't working. Ideally, it would work on the first request. But how important was the information? It was critical. So if it's critical, I need to do whatever it takes to get it, mm-hmm. right? And so what Jim's talking about is you want to grow in your career. You want to become a better performer. Man, you got to ask the damn question, right? The last episode, we got to speak with Darcy Spiteri. She's a first-year apprentice in the electrical trade up in Ontario, Canada. Yes. And she has... It was amazing, right? And maybe this is the secret, but she has no problem asking questions. No. Like that's her rate. She described like, yeah, they'll give me an assignment and I'll ask more questions. Like, what do you mean by that? And what do you want it to look like? Like she'll get very clear on what the expectation is to the point that sometimes people get frustrated with her. I think that's a natural, maybe. There's this thinking as a man, right? As a male, we're supposed to know and we can't ask questions.
Yep.
Right? Like we have this macho mentality that just figure it out.
Yep.
Well, she's a lovely lady. She doesn't have that damn ignorance. She no. just asked the damn question, right? That's... Like we could benefit from that.
Yeah. And it's a mindset change. We got to change a mindset. Construction. Yeah. In its whole has changed. It's changing every yes. single day. Ask the questions. Some people don't want to answer those questions, and that's okay. Some people don't want to follow in your footsteps or your guidance. That's okay. If you're talking to 15 people and two people really catch on and grasp onto what you're talking about, you're making a difference yes. in people. Who cares about the other 13?
Yes.
You're going to get a couple people on your train. And those are the people that are going to replace you in the future.
Beautifully said, Jen.
So focus your energy on those people. So Renee, if you've got this mindset that I want to do better, I want to do more. If you're not getting it from your direct supervisor, find another supervisor.
Ooh. You get to pick them, right?
Find them.
So Jim, what are some of the things that really make your job hard? and make your responsibility difficult.
Confrontation, believe it or not. I don't like going into a meeting and you're dreading going into that meeting because you know what you're going to hear. Why aren't you doing this? Here's a list of 15 things that you haven't done yet. I asked you for this information. You haven't provided to me yet. Why? You're not coaching your team right. You're not, you don't have control of your subcontractors correctly. So what do we have to do? We have to call your boss? Man, I'm at that point. I'll dial for you.
Yeah, here, call him.
Here it is. It's on my phone. Here, I'm pressing send right now. You talk to him. You know, that's a part of it. That we don't need to go down that route. But I don't like confrontation. I'm not a confrontational person. If you know that you're going into a meeting, you're going to get your ass reamed out, you better have notes. You better have answers to their questions. But if you come in there without being prepared for a meeting, is all you're going to get.
How do you feel about surfacing problems early? Like the minute you find out there's a problem, how do you feel about taking that up the chain?
I love it because problems are good things. It only gets you a chance to get better at something, right? Yep. Now you're looking for that problem because you discovered it.
Yes, it's not kicking you in the face anymore. You can do something about it, right?
Correct, correct.
Yeah, problems don't get better with age.
No.
Right?
No, they don't.
Like wine does, but not problems. As soon as you get a find out, I mean, it's another practice, Renee. Put that in your back pocket. I'll charge you later. Is when you find the problem, tell somebody. Don't hide it. Don't wish that it's going to get better. Hey, there's this thing that just happened. There's this issue. There's been a change. Whatever it is, I want to let you know it's going to impact our plan. And when you do that, you give the other, think of them as resources, right? All the other team members, you give them the opportunity to adjust and even contribute to solving that problem. But if you hide it, brother, that's when you sit in that meeting and, man, they're kicking you in the face. Like, hey, you were supposed to pour Tuesday. It's Thursday. Why haven't you poured? But if you knew you had an issue on Monday and say, hey, man, I got an issue, right? So-and-so now with COVID, they COVID positive. So I got three guys down. Like, I don't have the manpower. I'm going to get some new people in, but we're still not going to make Tuesday morning pour. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows. And it's that happens.
Are they happy about it? No. It's not how you start. It's how you finish.
Oh, yeah.
Discovering the problem is great. How do you plan on fixing that problem?
Yes.
Provide a solution to the problem. Don't just say, hey, we got a problem. Throw your hands up and say, all right, figure it out.
Yeah, negative on that. But you got to do that early, right? Yeah. The minute you find out. You can't wait on it. Yes, it's uncomfortable, but you got to get out there and put that.
It will come to light. You cannot hide anything in construction. It will come up.
It's going to come up for sure.
You told that story on your last podcast, Jesse, about your sink drain, your sink that you put in. I listened to it. And I'm thinking, okay, if he didn't say nothing and he were to put that sink in and it would have collapsed.
I would have been dude.
It's a whole different ballgame.
Totally different.
If you would have put that thing in, if you would have installed that, thinking that you were okay, I chipped all the concrete out, I'm good, right? Yep. You got no base for that to sit on when earth settles and everything else and it sinks. Well, who did? I don't know who did it. Jesse did.
Jesse did that.
He brought it up to light, you know?
This has been good conversation, Jim. We've talked about, your career. You kind of go with the flow guy. You have an intensity about you. And I've had the privilege of you and I having some real deep conversations, like real hard conversations. I say hard because, again, in the industry, right, a lot of people are macho and protected and don't share their fears and concerns. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Jim and I have been able to have those conversations, right, about our fears and concerns. You shared with us how you really don't want to disappoint people.
No.
Right? You want to deliver on people's expectations and that you're your own worst critic. And sometimes that can be a nightmare, right? Like your internal voice, it never really gives you a compliment. I'm guessing.
The always fear of failure.
Yes. Yes. So,
you know, what was really weird is I've never won an award before in my life, besides my military decorations that I've gotten. But when I work with Turner, it's something to admit, to show that I'm vulnerable. I was proud as hell that I won that Superintendent of the Year award. Mm. Yep. I've never had an award before in my life. I've never gotten a plaque
Wow.
or anything. That was my very first one I've ever gotten, honestly.
Well, and it was hard earned. I mean, you did earn that. So how, like, you know how rewarding and meaningful that recognition was. You know how that felt.
Yep. But I changed my mindset. That's the difference, is that on or about that, and when I'm looking back at that, that's when I read that book, Extreme Ownership.
Mm.
I changed my mindset and the way I wanted to approach my life. I have a very supporting wife and a very supporting daughter that believe in me. You need to have a baseline. You have to have a foundation in order for you to succeed.
And of course, the concrete guy is telling you you need a foundation, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course. You need tears. I need to drill that in. I got to put my foot in the sand. You need a foundation. That's awesome.
No, but I think you, so many people, and Renee, maybe, I don't know where you're thinking is. I get a sense of where you are at, you know, in your understanding. But a lot of people, young folks out there, are focused on the plaque, right? I want the plaque. I want the promotion. I want the recognition. But what I heard you say, Jim, was that the plaque was a result or a byproduct of your mindset.
Correct.
Mm. How many people you think out there actually understand and practice that?
There's not that many that I can think of that. If I gave you a word of advice real quick,
yeah, no, go for
talking
it.
About your extreme ownership, be cautious on your extreme ownership around your wife.
Yeah,
just I'm be cautious. Okay.
And for our audience, right? Extreme Ownership is an amazing book, right? It's the philosophy is powerful, and it's very easy, because I know a bunch of people that have done this, to read that book. And their first thought is, man, this would be great for my son or my daughter or my boss or my coworker.
If that's what you're thinking, stop,
time out, problem.
Yes.
It is for you.
Yes.
It is for you. You cannot extreme ownership somebody else. You have to take extreme ownership. And leave the rest of it to them. There's an interesting thing I've seen over and over. Like, man, that book's great. I wish so-and-so would read it. Like, okay, that's a clear indicator to me. You did not understand what the book was intended to communicate.
Yes. Yes.
A big part of that book, my takeaway from it was to quit assigning blame and take ownership. And by reading it and telling people, like, yeah, you need to read this, you need to read this, you're automatically, by definition, assigning blame.
You are. Here's a dilemma that I see, and this is my hardest thing that I have. What Jocko's talking about, in my mind, have your respect for your people, train your people, teach your people.
Agreed, 100%. So, Jim, time for the finale, the hard question. What's your plan for changing the world going forward?
Well, yeah. I was going to use the toilet one, but Jason used that one. So,
the porta potty, clean porta potties on every job site. That's beautiful.
That was awesome. That was awesome. I'm like, man, that was a good one there. I just want people to respect each other.
Mm.
Get off of social media. Start living your life. This is the best country in the world. And it's going to shit real quick. Rome wasn't built in a day, but it also wasn't destroyed in a day neither.
Yes.
So something's going on in this country. I just want this stuff to stop, man. You just shake your head every day. You hear the news. You read this. You just, what's next? God, I don't want to go into a civil war, you know?
Yeah.
We just got to start being nice to each other.
That's another one of those deceivingly simple ideas.
Why can't we have some more respect for people? Is life that big of a deal that you got to hate each other? It's in my head from drill sergeants. We are all green. It don't matter the color of your skin, what race you are, what ethnicity, what gender. If you don't want to deal with that person, don't deal with them. You may have to professionally. Does anybody really have the answer of what they want to do to change the world? You got to change yourself before you change the world.
That's probably the hardest mission out there. But be nice to each other. Change yourself. Yeah. Right? Stop hating. I mean, you're right. We're in a time right now with social media. I don't know. I'm not an expert in this field. But, you know, the interesting thing about social media is that it provides a platform for people for one-way communication.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't listen to social media unless you're listening to my posts, right? Yeah. To the Learnings and Missteps posts. You get permission to listen to those. But it's people putting their ideas and their thoughts out, right? Like, and this becomes a regular thing. I get kind of recondition or reformat my brain in such a way that all I really do is put information out or put my message out. But what I'm not doing is taking information in. So now we have this multitude of people, even in an uncharged scenario, right? Like right now, I agree with you, Jim. Like our environment out there is heavily charged. And I'm concerned too that there's a problem coming. There's a train wreck ahead of us. And because everybody is talking and everybody wants to be heard, so they talk louder and talk louder and talk louder and scream. And so everybody's screaming right now, but nobody's listening.
Correct.
And we could just be nice and listen to somebody else's perspective. You don't have to adopt it. I don't have to adopt your thinking.
No.
And I don't have to like your ass either, because I can go home after we have this exchange and just leave it at that. I understand where you're coming from. I don't agree where you're coming from. But hey, man, cool.
Agree to disagree.
That's it. And we can do that all day, every day.
Well, no, we're not leaving this room until you agree with this. No, I'm just going to agree to disagree. That's all.
What do you think about that?
I think it's spot on. I think if we can start thinking about how we're all the same, or how and start thinking about ways we're similar than ways we're different, I think we can, because like all of our shit stinks. We all put our pants on this one leg at a time, and if we can focus on that instead of how we're different, I think we can move mountains, you know?
Oh, you got Billy Badasses behind computers all day long, right?
So yeah.
You send a text message and you get mad because of he capitalized a word. Oh, and he could have accidentally done it. I sent an email out, and as I read it back after I sent it, I'm like, I got to call her. And I apologized to her. I said, look, if that email came across this way, it wasn't driven that way. I just need this information. If you're behind on a text message or something like that, pick up the phone and call somebody. Call them. Because people read things. Why are you yelling at me? You text me all in capital.
Yes. What? You know, email and text, it's funny. Because the words, because I have the same issue, right? When I'm texting or emailing, the tone and the language that I choose to put in that email or the text can be interpreted many different ways. And I'm rare, like, you know, I get to choose my attitude every day, and I choose to smile and be happy. So when I'm typing an email or a text message, just know that I'm happy. But not everybody understands that, because this is what we do. And I do it too. When I get, you know, those text and email messages, there's a lot of, you know, you look at an email and there's a lot of text, right? And it's in a color, black or blue or whatever. And then what I do is I fill up all the white space with my insecurities and my assumptions that transform those words into an offensive message.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we just don't fill the white space, read the words, and make a damn phone call if it makes you feel some kind of way.
I did it a couple of days ago. That, pardon me guys, that motherfucker. All right, I got back in and I started replying. You know, I replied. I had this big, long email. But guess what? I stopped.
Nice.
Jesse, those reflection emails that I sent you.
Yep.
You know, that's showing vulnerability.
Yes. So let me give our audience some context. So Jim's just recently started a practice of sending a reflection email, right? And so what it is what he does is reflect on the day before in the evening, right? He reflects on his day, and wherever he made a misstep, a bad decision, or came across a problem, the next morning he sends an email to his entire team of what happened, right? Like, this is what I did. This is where I was wrong or inappropriate. This is what we did. This is where we can improve. And this is our thoughts of adjustments going forward. Does that explain it, Jim?
Yeah, that's pretty much right on. And if you're sending it to 12 people, 10 of those guys could give a rat's ass what you're sending.
Yep.
There's two people paying attention to that and wanting to change with you. I did it for multiple reasons. One is to see what type of reaction I was going to get. Two was, I'm airing out my dirty laundry.
I'm going to steal that reflection email for our team. I think that will do wonders for our team. Because like in our team, we have a lot of, I guess, cheesemen and like, well, he did that, so why is he judging me for doing this? You know, and he did that and that. And then like we get defensive, like, well, how are you telling me about that when you do this? You know, we have all that. But if we just were vulnerable and just drop the walls, we're not perfect. Yes, here's what I did. Here's what I ran into. And here's my plan moving forward. And just be humble about it and share it with the team and to share that it's okay to be humble and it's okay to put your pants on one leg at a time. I think that would cause wonders for our team.
Yeah, write it down. Where's your pen and paper?
Oh, busted.
Oh, you busted me. You busted me again.
You know, I was writing down stuff, so I've got here while we were talking. So I've got down, just reiterate some things here. We worked about loyalty. We talked about loyalty. That's a good one there.
Yep.
The Duolingo app, I never knew about that one. So as we're talking, I'm just writing down notes. I came back to, so on Tuesday, January 19th, am I not leading correctly? I'm reading it almost verbatim here. What am I doing wrong? What if I wasn't here? You're not doing the right thing. It's a result of what I'm doing. I'm not giving you the information that you need. And that's when you came back in, Jesse, and you came out with it and you said right here, assign the task and give it a time frame to achieve it.
Yeah, we were talking about, actually, thank you, Jim. I'll take that as a compliment that you even took notes about the garbage that comes out of my mouth. He was asking, like, you know, I'm given instruction and the outcome that I was seeking is not what I'm getting. Like, what the hell's, you know, those are two questions. What am I doing wrong? Is it the way I'm leading? Man, if you ask yourself those questions every day, I'm telling you, you're going to pass people up. And I'm saying that to all our listeners out there, right? Like, what am I doing wrong? What can I improve? And is it because of the way I'm leading? Now we're talking about ownership, right? What can I change? So my response to him was, you know, we're pretty good at giving direction, right? Do this. What we need to get better at is confirming that the individual has worked through how they're going to execute that and that they understand the time frame, right? So I'll start with the time frame. It's so easy to say, hey, man, I need you to do this. And the person will usually say, yeah, okay, I'll get it. Got it. Understood. I'll make it happen. And then I come back after lunch and say, hey, man, what's up? Like, I told you I needed to get it done. But there was never a conversation about when it needed to be done. And so now we have a commitment about when. That's important. The other part is I still need to figure out if they understand how they're going to make it happen. So right now the formula is issue the assignment, issue the task, and ask them, how are you going to go about executing that task? Because now the individual has to pause and think like, ooh, well, I have all these other things I need to do. And it gives them the space to say, Jim, man, I got to do this, this, and this. So I can do it afterwards. And Jim, that gives Jim the opportunity to say, you know what? That second thing on your list, go ahead and bump that to the bottom and put this one on top. So now there's a path, right? The person has thought through how they're going to deliver and fulfill the request. And there is an agreed upon commitment as to when that will be done. That'll save us so many headaches and screaming matches. What do you think, Jim?
Yes, but there's one thing that you're missing.
Okay.
Is that you got to complete the circle. You have to, as a leader, you have to follow back up to make sure that's done.
Yes. Close the loop.
Respect. Close that loop.
So, Renee, do you have any last thoughts?
Yeah, I think final comment, and it's a testimony of what you guys just talked about going full circle and making sure people understand the task. This literally just happened to me yesterday. It's fresh in my mind. So my boss, he's like, hey, Renee, I need this email about, I need you to compile all the resource usage you guys use while working on that project, right? And to one email. And I was like, okay, cool. And in the past, our team has had problems, maybe with some time management and miscommunication, right? Like, so in the past, we would have taken that information, like, and maybe not have done it right away, or we didn't understand what the time frame was, right? Mm. So when somebody got under the hot seat, they're like, yo, I need this information. We're like, well, we hadn't worked on it yet, or like, we're not done or something. But this time, one thing I wanted to end with is like, just ask, you know? So he told me that I need this email, and I just asked, well, when? Like, you know, when can I work on this? It's as simple as that. And he's my boss. And that's another thing I want to piggyback on too, is, which is really cool about you, James. It sounds like you're willing to provide the space for your juniors to ask. Like you create an environment that it's okay to ask questions and you don't need to be afraid, right?
It's
and
actually encouraged.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And my boss is awesome like that too. So like I feel confident enough to ask my boss like when, without him being like, are you smart mouth than me or whatever, just figure it out. No, he told me when. And then I told, just like you said, Jesse, like, well, I got this, and this to do too. And he was like, all right, well, knock off that thing, put this up the top. It's like exactly what you guys talked about just happened to me today, right? And I did it, and then I sent it to him, and then shortly after he replied to me, he's like, dude, awesome email. I really like this, and this about it. I was like, well, actually, before that, he said, great email, and then ask, right? I asked him, well, what did you like about it so that I can continue to do it that way? And then he's like, give me a second. I'll read it out and we'll break it down. And he sent me another email about breaking it down. He said, I really like this. Next time, change this, right? So now I know for the next time to do it that way. And then to bring, like you said, James, to bring it full circle. At the end of the day, he replied to the whole team. He's like, dude, I really like this email from Renee. This is what I liked about it. And he sent it to the whole team.
Wow.
So now I feel great. And then now everybody else and the team knows how to do it too.
Yep.
And it went full circle.
Can't let that get to your head. You got to be humble.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. You know? So Jim Bob the Builder Olmsted.
Yes,
what
sir.
What are your final thoughts?
Man, I love podcasts. This is awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just having a conversation. That's the biggest thing. Why can't we just have conversations? Mm-hmm. Agree to disagree. Enjoy each other's company. Life would be so much easier if we just had conversations. Yep. Get aligned. If we're misaligned, realign ourselves. All start rowing in the right direction. There's a few podcasts that really inspired me. There's Andy Stump. It's called Cleared Hot.
Cleared Hot, okay.
Cleared Hot is an awesome podcast. I listen to, obviously, Jocko's podcast. And then I'm on one from Dan Crenshaw. That's actually pretty cool. It's a political podcast. I've been promoting this podcast too because it's awesome. I love Ian.
You, man.
Ian's conversation was great. I wish I would have known that more about Ian. Jason's was pretty cool. The gentleman out of California. Yeah.
J Money.
That was awesome, man. I enjoyed it. I really did. All right.
No, man, we covered a lot of good things. And I want to repeat for the audience, be nice. Have some conversations. You're offering that for people to think about, right? Be nice. Have some conversations. Respect. Trust. I mean, all these beautiful things. It's going to take work. It's not easy. But if we did a little bit more of it, things would be better. That was a pretty cool conversation with Jim. What do you think, Renee?
Yeah, super awesome.
Right? We zigzagged back and forth, but we got to touch on some real deep issues there. I don't know if I told you this, but we got a bunch of listeners in Ontario, Canada, that have been dedicated in catching a lot of our episodes. So shout out to Ontario. And I imagine, Renee, you got somebody in mind that you want to recognize.
Yeah. Let's give a shout out to Annalisa. She says, I hired my replacement yesterday. After that, I tuned into your podcast and thought I needed to hear some positive words and reassure myself this is possible. Wow, Annalisa, that means a lot to us. We're super humbled to have impacted you in a positive way. So thank you.
Man, you are one dedicated listener, sticking with us all the way through to the very, very end. Please know that this podcast dies without you. And we invite you to share how the episode's impacting you, along with your thoughts, questions, and suggestions. You've been gracious with your time, so we added social media links in the show notes to make it super easy for you to connect with us. Be kind to yourself, stay cool, and we'll talk at you next time.